time to get our view from the north. Ow! Back safely, 401k intact from Vegas. Find all he's up to for NBC Sports Northwest. He's talking bull, he's talking ducks, he's podcasting with Bree Amaranthus on the Duck Squad. Follow on Twitter, the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how are things?
I'm stressed, man.
You're stressed? What do you have to be stressed about?
The Bulls have won 7 straight. Which part of tanking do they not get?
Can't live like this. And now they're going to play Cleveland. They're tied or it's close game at the half. Yeah, they didn't get the memo. I put this one on you.
This is Chris Dunn is balling out. Marketing is a real deal. Mirotić came back from his face being destroyed by Portis, and those two are balling out together. It's just very distressing.
Yeah, between your the team that has your heart and the team you cover, the last thing you want is to fall into that 38-43 win window forever.
No, not in the year you're supposed to take. That's what the Blazers did a couple years ago when they were supposed to win 23 games, according to Vegas, and they went out and made the playoffs. They're never going to recover from that because that was a chance to get a top 5 pick and get another star on the team. The Bulls are going to do the same damn thing. Ugh.
You seem a little put out by this.
I told you I'm not happy. Anyway, what's up?
I can hear it. So I caught something on Twitter the other day. I thought it was a gag. I know she's a friend of yours. Is Bree Amaranthus going on the actual network TV Bachelor?
She is officially on The Bachelor and it starts the first. She is a contestant.
Oh, man, that's a star. I've never watched any of those shows, but I feel like almost an obligation here.
I watched the first couple of seasons, and I was like, I can't take this nonsense anymore. I've never watched The Bachelorette, so I will watch when Bree is on. That'll be the first time I've watched it since, I can't remember when the first 2 seasons were. As long, some, it might have been late 90s, early 2000s, or whatever, probably early 2000s. Yeah, I think it's just craziness, Brett. We'll see how she does.
Hey, there's a difference with me or you than a 20-something being able to do it. So, yeah,
exactly.
A little more flexibility. So I saw you tweet out when the news hit yesterday that LeVar Ball is going to start a league for guys who don't want to go to college and can't go straight to the NBA. You tweeted, what can possibly go wrong? So on a scale of 1 through 10, where 10 is brilliant and 1 is taking Tim Tebow in the first round, where does this fall?
Oh, 2.5 maybe. I just don't understand that we should be pushing kids to want to go to college. And the money they're offering, up to $10,000 a month, so if it's a 4-month league, you make $40,000. I mean, is that really better than going to college for a year, at least getting, you know, an education? And most of these kids, I think, who are going to end up in this league are guys who probably aren't going to really be big NBA stars or even make it in the NBA. I think there's going to be a lot of pipe dream kids in this league. They're going to not – guys who would have had a chance to get a 4-year, you know, degree for free, and they're going to lose out on that because they're going to chase this cheap little money and then with the hopes of getting drafted out of this league. And I just don't think it's going to work out well. There's no way you're going to get better coaching in that league, I don't think, than what you would get at a major college, let alone the better competition you're going to get, the exposure you're going to get. I just think it's going to be bad news.
Yeah, it doesn't sound logical. Let's get to the Vegas Bowl. I said leading up, when you consider men's hoops and football, why would you think anything's going to go well for Oregon against Boise State? But so you had the coaching change. Freeman didn't play. The Broncos seemed to view these games like the Super Bowl. How surprised were you at just the flat-out awful performance? Let's start with the running game of the Ducks.
Very surprised. I have them winning 44-30. I thought there's no way they're not going to get 40 points in this game, given the fact they're with Herbert. I think they averaged 50-52. They ran the ball in the Pac-12 for 270 yards per game. Boise State does have a good run defense, but with that offensive line, even without Freeman, you have three good running backs. He's run well in games when Freeman didn't play or got injured. So there's no reason to believe they weren't going to score 40 points. And instead, they couldn't score an offensive touchdown until their third quarter and then didn't get their second offensive touchdown until there was a couple minutes to go in the game. I'm completely still flabbergasted by that. They rushed for 47 yards, net 80 gross before the sacks and losses. That's just amazing to me. Like, I still can't believe that happened. And then on top of that, they couldn't protect Herbert very well. He sacked four times, harassed him to some interceptions. It was just, like, it was bad. And, you know, so my feeling was that, okay, clearly this team was maybe distracted, uninspired. I posed that question. Kyrie Robinson shook his head at me. Cristobal said, well, I guess that's your opinion. I was offended by the question. But I didn't mean it in a derogatory way, like Cristobal couldn't get them motivated or anything like that. I just meant, like, man, they went through a lot. Like, that was a lot of stuff going on. And, you know, a lot of times, like, the last time they played in the bowl game was at the end of December, the Alamo Bowl. And usually you play your bowl games after the 20th. And here they were playing on the 16th, 8 days after Cristobal was hired, 10 days after Tiger was introduced at Florida State. And there was a lot, that's a lot to put on a bunch of kids. And I just didn't feel like they came out and played with the fire you'd expect them to play. And Cristobal downplayed that, but that just means that they just got their butts kicked in every way, shape, or form by a Mountain West team. I'd rather have my team be distracted than go out there and get manhandled like that, especially when you have a really good offensive line. And Crosby played. You know, your best offensive lineman played. Yep. So it was a bad look for the Ducks all the way around.
Talking Duck football with Aaron Fentress. So I did the math. That was the second least productive Boise State offense this century since Dirk Cutter was coach in 2000. 400 yards a game. They had 300 by halftime. And all season long, the defense played pretty well. Again, it's kind of the same question. How much of a head shaker was it they got worked by this Boise offense?
Yeah, you know, the defense got two touchdowns to keep the game interesting, obviously, but those two touchdowns were the product of, and even the interception by Springs were the product of really bad decisions by Boise State. Like, what?
Yep.
You know, that your Liberty thing didn't work out, and then that pick that Tyree got, my God, that was an awful pass, and the one Springs, I don't know who that guy ripping was throwing to. So, yeah, I mean, you can give credit to defense for taking advantage, but had Boise State not shot themselves in the backside on those three drives, let's say they get a touchdown and two field goals. So, okay, so that's 38-0 at halftime. So, I just, you know, the second half, though, you have to give them credit. The defense shut things down pretty well and gave the offense a chance to get back in it. And, you know, if you take away Herbert's pick six, they have the ball and a chance to win it, you know, with, you know, a couple minutes to go. So, give the defense credit for the second half. But, yeah, the first half, the defense got dominated, the offense got dominated. And to me, I'm going to throw this out there. I think that was worse than the Alamo Bowl, because in the Alamo Bowl, at least you led and looked good, and your quarterback got injured. In this game, you never led, you never looked good, and your quarterback was healthy. So think about that for a minute.
Yeah, or just go back and burn both tapes. obviously, you being in the stadium on TV, they made a couple of references, the ESPN guys, about Freeman being there, addressing the team. Then at halftime, Booger McFarland and Mack Brown kind of laid into them. What did you make of all that? You know, the running back decides he's going to go to Vegas. He's not going to play. What was it, all of a 45-second speech? Do you think that had any kind of impact, or is that kind of like a little bit of too much ado about nothing?
I think it's between Freeman and the team, and I think people need to stay out of the locker room on this one. I think people are making a lot of assumptions. If some players came forward and said, man, I didn't want to hear from Freeman, he sold us out, then you could say, okay, he shouldn't have spoken to the team. It might not have gone over well, at least with some of the players. But that wasn't the case. People were just reacting to it. And I think, you know, I think it's clear that in our society, our sports society, we have fallen into certain sets of rules and things that are supposed to exist, and, you know, codes you're supposed to follow. And some of it's arcane and nonsense. The bottom line is, Royce Freeman, if a player on that team had a problem with what Royce Freeman did, then that player just doesn't get it. Like, just doesn't understand the bigger picture. And I think Freeman made by far the right choice. It was the Vegas Bowl, dude. There was 36,000 people there. There were so many empty seats. How many Duck fans bothered to even go to that game? Maybe 15,000, if that. If that. And, you know, it's one of the first bowl games. It's meaningless. It's, you know, you're the seventh or eighth seed from the conference. Like, why would anyone risk $10 million to go play in that game? And that's what you're saying. And so, for me, rich people sitting in a booth who are making a ton of money just covering the game and calling it, criticizing a young kid who's trying to protect his number one asset, which is his body, in a violent sport so that he can maximize his earning potential for him and his family, is just pathetic for me. And he gave Oregon 950 carries. Anyone who has a problem with what he did or the fact that he talked to his team as a team captain can just go fly kite as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and along those lines, you mentioned the broadcasters who, when you go into a broadcasting career, you could work for 40 years. A running back, their average shelf life is like 3 years, not to mention coaches who come and go. So is it a little hypocritical that the same broadcasters cite Freeman and don't mention a word about the coach who went one and done?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's major college football is in business, period. And he's playing the business. He's being a smart businessman. I'm absolutely flabbergasted that this was even a thing. When people were telling me this in the press box, I was like, what, really? I almost wanted to walk over to the booth and be like, you guys are drunk. Like, shut the hell up. Kirk Herbstreit, he's been a player more recently. I would expect him to get it. Mac Brown, he's an old ball coach, okay.
Sure.
A coach is not going to get it. But someone, I was at a basketball event, Sunset basketball event last night, and some guy was talking to me about the Ducks, and they were saying the same thing about the Freeman thing, just another example of, where people are putting the business ahead of sports. I'm like, whoa, listen, man, how can you ask someone to risk $10 million to play in a meaningless exhibition game? And the guy was like, yeah, I guess when you put it that way, I go, exactly. Like, look what happened to EFO. EFO got injured non-contact drill before the national playoff game. Now, Freeman had set out a playoff game, I'd be like, okay, that's not cool. Why'd you even play this season? But a meaningless game, sit it out, man, and protect yourself. McCaffrey did it. Fournette did it. More and more people are going to do it. Here's the other thing, too. The running back, when you're a lead running back, you're looking at getting 28 carries, pass protecting, blocking. You're looking at making contact with people maybe 40 or 50 times. You have probably the greatest chance of getting injured. Protect yourself.
Yeah, and not to mention the trifecta of guys you said missed the citrus sun in Vegas. When somebody misses a rose or a national semi, then maybe we'll talk differently.
Exactly.
Talking with Aaron Fentress, NBC Sports Northwest. So as if having the first Tuesday in February wasn't insane enough with the sports world stopping for fax machines, now we've got an early recruiting day. I try not to think about it because I have guys like Matt Prehm to do all the work. But
yeah, we love Matt Prehm.
I thought what you wrote was interesting. You kind of brought up the double-edged sword. What were you talking about? The up and downside of this new approach.
Yeah, so the good thing is you can lock in guys early, obviously, and you can check them off. You don't have to worry about them for the next 6 weeks. The bad news is the guys who don't sign right away, you have to wonder, oh, my God, why won't you sign yet? How committed are you? I mean, if you're committed, you're committed, right?
Yeah.
what's the problem? But I think Oregon had a pretty good day yesterday. 13 signees, I think. I think was there one today, maybe?
Yeah.
Considering all that had happened, we just talked about that, Taggart leaving, new coach, and then getting blasted in the Vegas Bowl. I think to get 13 guys to sign on the dotted line was a good day. Clearly, this class is not going to be anywhere near what it was before Taggart left. I think at one point they had 17 four-star commits. They just got 6 to sign. I think they still have three or four others committed. So you're looking at a class that I think when it's all said and done is actually going to be more in the mid-teens. I think it's 11, 12 right now.
Yep.
But there's a lot of major programs behind them that are just getting started. Michigan, Florida State, USC, UCLA. There's a couple of ones I can't remember. Tennessee, traditional powers that usually recruit really well. A few of those are going to move past Oregon, I believe. But I think, at the end of the day, it'll still be strong, but it's not going to be what it was, man, at all. There's no way.
And lastly, obviously the players rallied behind Cristobal. I thought that meant bye-bye Leavitt. Then the word comes down. Both he and Salavea were going to stay. Leavitt got a nice $500,000 a year raise. What's your level of surprise that he ended up coming back?
Everything I heard was that he was very upset and looking to bounce. However, and I threw this out there every time I talked about this, money talks. You know what I'm saying? And if Oregon was going to step up with some cash and, you know, make an offer he couldn't refuse, and he was going to stay. And that's what happened. He got $500,000 or $600,000 more to stay, you know. Now, if there had just been like, no, you're stuck at 1.1, he got offered from someone else for the same money, I think he would have been gone. But if they're going to pay you 1.7, you know, now another team has to step up with 1.8 plus the $500,000 buyout, 2.3, just to get him, I think that's preposterous. I think 1.7 is preposterous. He's been a defensive coordinator for 3 years. It's just amazing to me that he's become like the Buddy Ryan of defensive coordinators or something like that. It's like, really? I mean, you're paying this guy $1.7 million to be a defensive coordinator. Now, obviously, he did a great job. They made a great turnaround this past year. We'll see how they go moving forward. I'm glad for Oregon that they were able to keep him, because losing him and Taggart would have been a real double whammy. And at the end of the day, you know, look, you know, they kept their top four assistants, Cristobal, Arroyo, Leavitt, and Salavea. That is huge. And there's no reason to believe that they can't be as successful moving forward as they would have been with Taggart, although you could argue, well, they could have had those four and Taggart. But you never know how things are going to shake out for either program. But I will say this, the first game without Taggart running the offense and calling the plays, they didn't look very good. I've been told they changed some things schematically, did not work out. They have a whole year now or 9 months to figure that out and get everything back on track. But I think it's going to be kind of interesting to see how this staff works chemistry-wise moving forward. But Cristobal said all the right things yesterday, so there should be a lot of hope for good things ahead for Oregon.
I'll tell you what, if you want to put things in perspective, I started doing the show in the mid-90s, and I remember there was an article written about how crazy the money had gotten in college football when Paterno and Bowden got $500,000 a year. That's just what Oregon gave as a raise to their defensive coordinator. Oh,
amazing.
Man. We are in the wrong business. All right, man. Listen, he's Aaron Fentress, NBC Sports Northwest, on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. You and your family have a magnificent, enjoyable Christmas. I appreciate all the great stuff you provide us with all season long, and we'll catch up real soon.
Man, I'm not going to be happy about Christmas or anything unless the Bulls start losing.
All right, well, I'll keep an eye, and I'll be a Cavs fan for you tonight. How's that?
I appreciate it, man. All right, take care.
Take it easy.